All right. Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the January 23rd, 2025 Washington County EMS Alliance meeting. We will get things underway. I think everybody's very familiar with one another here in the meeting, so I don't think introductions are necessary. If I could get a motion to approve today's agenda.
So moved.
Thank you, Chief.
This is Mira. I'll second.
Thank you, Mira. And also, if you had a chance to review the December meeting minutes, can I get a motion to approve the December meeting minutes?
Yeah.
Thanks, Chief.
This is Rob. I'll second.
Thank you. And Mira, I don't see anybody, but are anybody signed up for a public comment? No.
No one for public comment that we know of ahead of time.
Awesome. Thank you. And we'll move down to item number two, strategic planning. First item is governing board chair and vice chair nominations and voting. So, Adrian, it's got you on the agenda as fostering this us through this, I guess.
Sure. I would open it up for any nominations for chair or vice chair.
All right, I will make a nomination that Chief Smario from TBF&R serve as the EMS Washington, the Washington County EMS Alliance chair, if he's willing to accept that nomination.
Yes, sir, I am willing to accept that nomination. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief.
Hey.
Does
Any
any
other nominations? Okay, I guess all in favor of Chief. Sorry, Chief. All in favor of Chief Smario being the chair to the EMS Alliance. Say aye, raise your hand, indicate it in some way.
Aye.
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 Perfect. Let's go with that. Any nominations for vice chair? And Chief Smario, you'll always have support from the EMS team.
Well, right now, and I'm happy to continue with it unless there's a nomination for someone else.
Thank you, Chief Gearing. Hearing no other nominations, after today, we will move forward with Chief Mario as chair and continuing with Chief Gearing as vice chair. Thank you to you both. We will make sure to get you on the invite for the planning meeting.
It's the Jim and Jim show.
Oh, I did not even think about that.
That well played. Thank you, Chief Gearing. And Chief Samario and Chief Gearing and Adrian, if it helps to keep tag me along for a couple months on the meeting agenda prep meetings, just as Chief Samario and I talked briefly last week about a discussion about transitioning. So I'm happy to stay around and help with that any way I can. There's been a lot done here recently. So happy to do that.
Perfect. Thanks.
No, thank you again, Chief Mario and Chief Gearing. Yeah. Next item on the agenda today is the last time we did a bylaws review and change and adopted those changes as an alliance, and an opportunity was given to anybody to submit potential changes. Additional changes. Adrian, do you receive any additional recommendations for bylaws changes?
I did not, but they could have come in a number of routes.
Okay. Or yeah, you're ready. Did you anybody? Or I guess I could ask, did anybody submit any? I don't see any, and this sort of is attached to item 2C, the Gaston and Cornelius conversation, a little bit in that. We might end up having a bylaws change if there become additional members to the alliance, but obviously the Gaston Chief is, I don't see, I don't see Dave today. And a Cornelius Fire Chief to be determined. So, Adrian, I think, let me stick with item B for a second. Conversation about any new bylaws changes. It doesn't sound like we have any, given that there were no submittals for additional bylaws changes. So okay. We will stick with the adopted changes from the last meeting as the current bylaws.
Okay, that sounds great. And then item C, like you said, would reflect, and we don't have a super long agenda today. It might be worth having some discussion today about those two agencies and how they fit into the alliance. And well, Chief Gearing.
Yeah, thanks. I'm not quite sure how to answer that. I can provide, I'll start by providing an update on Cornelius. I think everyone's aware that Cornelius is underway with a recruitment for fire chief. Started off with, I forget what it was, a dozen or so applicants, which made its way to, after a screening, made its way to 8 applicants. There are 3 rounds of interviews, 3 panels. The first and second panel have been completed, and there are now 3 on to the last portion, and that'll take place on Wednesday, the 20th. And then the city manager has said that he wants to make a selection or name a selection. Well, I'm not sure if he's going to name it or not. Make a selection by the first week in February. And then there'll be some, some level of background and an onboarding process. And that'll take another, I'm guessing, 4 weeks plus. We're looking at end of February, beginning of March time for the new person to come on board. with that process, and that's what I think we can expect.
Does that make them then completely separate from Forest Grove?
Well, I think so, and some of these things are up in the air, and it's really and see. I'm not really sure what the transition is going to look like. We've sort of embedded all of our operations and our administrative functions together for the last, I think, 12 years, and certainly for the last 3 years, and it's pretty tight. So we're going to have to align some things. There are probably some things that we're not even aware of that need to be unwound. And then there's a desire on the part of Cornelius to make its IGAs for services unknown and dependent on who the fire chief is and what experience that person brings. And I'm told that the new chief and I will get together and hash these things out and figure out what those service requests might be from Cornelius, and then who Cornelius might seek those services from. I don't know. Could be Forest Grove. I really don't know. And so the process, again, I don't know what those services might be.
Thank you. That's helpful. I don't know what other questions to ask around those two jurisdictions. It sounds like Cornelius is likely its own jurisdiction fully in Washington County, so something to really look at as the new chief comes on board. Gaston is considerably different in a number of ways. So don't know quite how to tackle that either. And maybe these are conversations to build out in future meetings as well.
Yeah, my sense is that they're that Gaston is his only, right, and because if the IGA between and Forest Grove is there's been a separate year. Cornelius, I know I just described some services or an idea that they may think is unknown, right, what they are, but I don't think they will have anything to do with EMS necessarily. I think that'll be standalone for Cornelius. My sense is that the services that they might need are duty chief coverage, things having to do with fire marshal's office, et cetera, and it's yet to be seen. But I think that they will be independent and perhaps want to be a member of this, individual member of this committee.
Thanks. And you were cutting out a little bit, but I think we got the gist of it.
Okay.
Okay, Chief Downey, I will pass back to you.
Yeah, Chief Gearing, to your point, I think if Cornelius is considered independent EMS, like Gaston's considered independent EMS, and they both we can either offer or they approach to becoming sort of governing board members and voting members of the Alliance, we would entertain that, of course. I think the issue would be if only one were to, and then we were to be an alliance of six organizations, we don't have any mechanism in the bylaws to break a tie if we had to motion for something and it was 3-3. So there, I guess a couple of things to consider in the future. If both were to join the alliance, we'd be at seven. We would avoid that problem. But if not, we're at six, we probably have to address what we would do in that circumstance. But we're not there yet. And we can talk to Chief Morris here in the near future and see.
I think
intention too, is to or not. And then we'll see what we learn from the
I think too, chief. We're still really interested in continuing the conversation about having voting representation from medical direction on the governing board as well. So that may come up again as kind of that number of votes and the even odd thing. And at some point, maybe we just need to figure out some tie-breaking language.
Yeah, I agree. Right. Who knows what there may be six or eight, or who knows, one of these days it could end up being an even number.
Two words, cage match. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, we'll definitely have to revisit Gaston Cornelius. And then, Adrian, to your point, medical direction and voting, that in and of itself would be a bylaws change too. So yeah. Okay. Any further discussion on bylaws or the future makeup of the alliance? No? Okay. We'll move down to work group reports. Let's see. Jack, welcome back.
Thank you. Good to be back.
Yeah, we last time we left this with the agency, you'd still needed some feedback from agencies as far as the data use agreement. How are we looking?
And I think we're still there. I've been off for a few weeks, but I gather that we're still waiting for a comment on the second draft from, I believe, all of the agencies at this point. I haven't heard anything, and I don't think Alyssa's heard anything to build on that. So I think we might move to a point where we set a deadline and sort of say if people haven't submitted a comment by a certain time, the comment period has passed or something like that. Just something to kind of push people along, push legal along. I think it's hung up in some agencies legal. But that's pretty much where we are right now. I don't really have anything further on that other than that idea to kind of push things along, which Alyssa and I were talking about earlier on today.
Okay. Do you mind, Jack, sending the second or the latest draft again so it's at the top of the inbox for everybody?
Sure thing.
And I guess just around the big screen here, What does everybody think is a fair deadline date? Because we can include that in the email to say, here's the latest draft and we need feedback by, or else we will probably sort of end up where we are today with people are going to get to it, but without a deadline, maybe not as quickly. So it's, yeah, obviously the 23rd. And we'd like to, I mean, the next meeting's February 27th. So we'd like to be able to really robustly discuss and maybe even, you know, agree to accept and then move on for signatures by the February meeting. So any suggestions?
Like mid-February or something? Is that too tight of a turnaround? There's not a lot to comment on, really. So I think it could move quickly if people sort of acted on it. It's just some minor changes in the second draft. I think the first draft was mostly reviewed already.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. If we're the 27th.
Do people have a sense of what hurdles are happening in each of the shops? Is there anything that we can discuss here to kind of mitigate those? Or is it just a matter of literally getting it to the eyes who need to review it?
I can speak for TVFNR. We're working with data use agreements with AMR right now, trying to button those up. And then once we understand what those are, with that, then we have to go back and look at what you guys are proposing and try to understand what is the difference. Are we already meeting all that information, what we're sharing with AMR? And there's just, I would say, a little bit of conflict in the organization to try to understand, why are we giving data to everybody? So I'm trying to navigate that is essentially where we're at. So we have to button up our stuff with AMR first. My assumptions are, based on our last meeting, that's in getting close. And then as far as with the county, what is the difference is one of the challenges. And why are we giving data to everybody? So I can only speak for TVFNR.
Okay.
I'd have to go back and look at a couple of emails, but there was, I believe, Chief Smarhal, there was some concern at the Fire Defense Board meeting. We didn't have one in December, so I'd be going back to the November meeting where there was concern about what was being shared and how much by each agency. And yeah, I'd like I said, I can go back and look. I know the Hillsborough teams reviewed it, the second draft, and we were just waiting to see what the additional changes might be from other agencies. But that Chief Smarhal's point about the degree of sharing, I think, came up in the November Fire Defense Board meeting, but I'd have to go back and look. So
I think the data is shared up to the county and then kind of cleaned and made system wide and then shared out. I think there's an option for agencies to share between themselves if they want, but I don't think there's any kind of mandate where people have to share sensitive data between agencies that might be used against them. So I think we were pretty specific in carving that out so it wouldn't happen, but we can go back and look.
Yeah, and I think too, Jack, it's written in a way that the data that might be shared individually is only reported out in aggregate. There's no this agency, that agency. It's a system-wide report that it's meant to reflect that, not sort of agency specific. That might have been something. So Tim, I see you nodding. Is that your recollection?
Yeah, that's my understanding as well. And I think the most sensitive data would be the patient level data that we'd use in the patient centric view. So again, it's not looking at how each individual agency is performing individually. It's how are we performing as a collective EMS system, again, from the patient's view outward. You know, the example that's always used is the chest pain ACS patient. Did they get aspirin and when? Did they get a 12 lead and when? Was there an activation and when? Those types of things. And collecting those from multiple data sources and stitching them together for a more complete view of patient care. And also within First Watch, there's ability to set at what level users can see individual agency data, and not, and there's only a select few at the agency level that have access to First Watch, and there again, each agency can set the level of data viewable, whether it's, you know, everything or just that the call exists and stuff. And Jack or maybe Alyssa can speak on the kind of use of the data. Again, it's not to be punitive or used in a nefarious manner. It's, again, this is all system building and improvement.
Yeah, I think we were trying to avoid a situation where sensitive data could be viewed and then in some future time when people weren't getting along so well, you know, leaked maliciously to the media or anything like that. We were really trying to avoid that happening and set that up for success in the future.
Yeah, and so to Chief Smario's point, it's not like an open source. Just the spigot is on, people can collect what they want. And there's safeguards that are able to be built in.
I see that Tim suggested the 14th of February. That's a ways out. We've been doing this for a number of months. Is that too far out? Is that about right for the processes that each of you has to go through?
I think that's reasonable.
I can only push so far and so fast in my organization. And I will do my best to try and meet that deadline or provide information back.
Okay. And Jack is going to send the latest version out again, so folks have it at the top of their emails.
And the 14th would work for Hillsborough. So we'll, hopefully we can have the feedback to Jack by then. And yeah.
Great. Thanks.
Okay. Jack, anything else from the data work group? I didn't think that's...
No, negative, nothing else from me.
Yeah, thank you. Chief Smario, anything from resource management or the system stewardship work groups?
Yeah, so resource management, we met last week, and felt like it was a pretty productive meeting. Dr. Sani and Tim were both there, so please chime in if you want to add anything here. We kind of walked through a few things. Jen was there as well, Jen Romero. And we started some discussions around multiple AMR units, both ALS and BLS being on calls, getting hung up. How can we dive into that and correct that? We think some of that's being executed by units on scene, not resource management, essentially, clearing a rig when it's not needed. We also, Tim shared with us that First Watch has a product called RIDE, which is Risk Identification Emergency Services. And it's a dashboard that kind of does some of that understanding of where the resources are at and how they're deployed. And then we also talked about a little bit of a reach, but something that's done in other places of the country where maybe trying to pilot it in the Western county agencies where a fire resource gets on scene, requests to BLS unit because of the deployment time of that BLS unit, potentially looking at some sort of assessment or release the patient till the BLS unit shows up as a model used elsewhere. So we kind of just talked through a little bit of the PDSA cycles and how we would execute that on those, specifically those number one and number three. Number two, we're going to have First Watch give a presentation at our next meeting to kind of understand that product a little further and see if that was a tool that could help with resource management. So I won't go any deeper, but I'll give Dr. Sani and Tim or Jen opportunity to add anything to that meeting.
Yeah, I think that pretty well sums it up. The RIDES is a module that is able to kind of take a look at their conference this past fall. Dr. Dia was there, and I was able to bring him in to look at it as well. It seems like something that could be useful even on the dispatch side of things, utilizing some call data and things like that to even model what calls would look like if they're dispatched as ALS or BLS, et cetera. So I think it'll be very interesting to see the presentation by First Watch at our next meeting.
Okay, nobody has anything else to add on that one. Other work group, system enhancement and financial stewardship. That group, we, because of the holidays, some conflicting stuff, we had to cancel our last meeting. So we had to have our next meeting on the books. I think, again, I think I spoke to this at our last meeting. There's going to be some challenges with that one until we have some conversations about what does that look like? What is the funding mechanism for that group to support any system enhancements? Because we're still trying to figure out how to identify that. And I think there's a broader conversation against the with the board here and how to make that mechanism happen. So nothing to really report with that group because we're having trouble identifying how the funding mechanism would be there for the fund and the financial stewardship. End of report.
All right. Thanks, Chief Mario. Let me see. Tim, anything we don't from the governance or regulatory documents? Nope. Okay. Sounds good. We'll move down to item number four, agency updates and round robin. Let's see. We'll start with Washington County. Anything additional, Adrian?
Yeah, I will just update that we are prepping for the public information side of the Nurse Navigator launch on March 4th, Tuesday. We have a press release which is being reviewed by partners right now. So a number of you have your PIO folks in our work group, which is awesome. So they're reviewing that. It'll come out from Washington County either the day before or the day of. I think we'll probably do it on Monday. And I am doing a presentation to the Board of County Commissioners on the Tuesday before as well, so that they're well aware that it's coming in a week. And it's a night meeting, so a little bit more public of a public meeting. So hopefully that will get out as well. And we're also working on our distribution routes to circulate the information about Nurse Navigator. We have it being translated into 7 or 8 languages. So we'll be pushing that out through our community-based organization partners and others to try to get it as broadly into the community as possible, so that the information is out there about that change to the 911 system. I think those are all the updates I have for that. Just excited about that work.
Thanks, Adrian. I don't have any updates from Hillsborough. Chief Espinoza, do we anything additional from Hillsborough?
Yeah, nothing specific. We did some work with Mercy Flights. We're still ongoing with WACA, but that's not much for this group. Things have been working for the most part pretty smooth.
Thank you. Chief Gearing from Forest Grove.
Nothing really to add, but just to say thank you to Chief Downey for your commitment to the EMS Alliance. And, we all understand the commitment and the energy that it takes to this type of work. Thanks for doing that.
Oh, no, my pleasure. Thank you. Chief Mario, I see Chief Weiss is here as well from TBFNR.
Sorry, I was late. I just want to make sure I wasn't voted into any positions.
You survived that.
I tried, sir.
Oh, good. The only thing that came up, and I don't know if you talked about it, Chief Smart, or not, but the BLS, I had questions about the utilization of BLS units in the county, and it came up on several ride-alongs I had and how we were using these units. And there were some changes, it sounds like, that were made in how they get put on call types, which I thought was interesting. I didn't know about it. But I didn't know if we were going to look into that a little bit more, because it doesn't sound like we're using them like we should be or could be. And then there were some changes that were made to how they were actually even sent out. One thing I heard is that AMR paramedics could dispatch a BLS unit, but now it's only a fire unit that can dispatch a BLS unit, which I thought was unique. I didn't know that we were doing that. I didn't know there was a change. So I was just hoping that maybe, and we talk about resource utilization, those kinds of conversations, we can get to a place where we can actually use these units the way they're intended in the system and maybe take some of the relief off of the heavy assets. So I just want to put it out there. Jimmy, are you in charge now? You're going to be the chair? Great. Put it on your list. That'll be something that we need to look into if you ask me. That's it.
I'm looking at other agencies. Everybody from banks today. Let's see, we will go to Jen at AMR.
Yeah, I don't really have much to report on. Staffing is still looking good. We, of course, are happy some of our partner agencies are taking advantage of the great paramedics we have and hired three of them. So we're backfilling for those. Otherwise, everything is going well.
All right. Thanks, Jen. Larry from Metro West.
Yeah, good afternoon. Just wanted to comment on the Chief Espinoza brought up about Mercy flights, and there's an email floating around, I think, between Hillsborough Fire and us, and I think Tim put out an email about it. But just want to say we added a full-time resource, actually a 24/7 unit just for flight calls. So that went into effect January 19th. And so just in between those Sundays, so Sunday through Wednesday, we ran 20 calls just with that one unit, and a total of 61 for January, which is a significant increase compared to like November, where I think we only ran 8. So anyway, I think we've got this issue resolved that we were dealing with before. So we've been in touch with all of the flight services that come into Hillsborough, and also PDX. And so they're aware that we have this 24/7 dedicated unit just for that particular service. End of report.
Hey, can I ask a question, Larry? Hey, Larry, James Samario, TBFNR. In the our work group meeting, we talked about the resource management work group meeting. Have you guys seen any potential impact from Oregon Department of Human Services responder alert around care facilities and seen an uptick with care facilities, interfacility transfers?
It's been gradually going up, but not like a spike. So okay. It's just been naturally increasing for the past year. But we haven't seen like a sudden surge in it.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks, Larry. Any other questions for MetroWest? No? Okay, thanks, Larry.
You're welcome.
Medical directors, Dr. Sani? Nothing? No? Okay. Dr. Dye?
Yeah, I think I was just putting a note in the chat. So I think Chief Weiss, your BLS question has come up, and we are actually been discussing that at WACA. So one of the things that is going to happen, unfortunately, is when we go to Nurse Navigator, there's a good chance that some of the current BLS options will disappear, because that's what Nurse Navigator is using largely in Knoxville, Tennessee, where we're able to look at a set of cards. So we're actually currently looking with the county at calls that actually get a dispatched as ALS, but then downgraded to BLS on the ambulance side, as well as vice versa, which is the BLS calls that get upgraded to ALS. So that's something we're monitoring. It's not a large volume per month, but we're actually looking at a couple of cards where we think the fall card and the trauma card, which sort of align in some ways where potentially we might be able to send more BLS resources. We do need to do some, we will have to take a look at our protocols as well, because at times the problem with the BLS utilization is it conflicts with what's in the current protocols as to when an ALS unit is needed versus a BLS. So that creates some challenges. But I think that as the system is now a year into having AMR and has matured a little bit, we have Nurse Navigator coming on. It's one of those things we are going to look at. The challenge is how much do you simultaneously and how many things do you change at one time? And it's difficult to change multiple things simultaneously. So our goal was to really get Nurse Navigator, the cards approved, and people get trained on that, and then hopefully begin to tackle the BLS piece. I don't know if Tim wants to comment a little bit, but I know we've had some side discussions at WACA with the county.
Yeah, I would have said largely the same things, Dr. Dyad. The other issue is kind of looking at care provided on scene, you know, if there's an ALS dispatch, probabilities of that patient receiving either a time-sensitive ALS intervention or any ALS intervention at all, and how that could maybe we could glean information from that to tweak or change or maybe add questions to dispatch to better hone in on the appropriate resource to dispatch from the start. My question to you in the chat, Chief Weiss, was more about the assigning of ALS or BLS ambulances by crews in the field. It's been kind of the operating guideline that crews arrive on scene and assess the patient first, and then kind of make a determination from there. And there hasn't really been a change from that. But part of the resource management work group, and this is the project that we're working to do, is we see times where a BLS ambulance is, at, you know, 5 minutes into the call before anybody's on scene, requested by whomever, without even assessing the patient first, based solely off of call notes, maybe just a premature closure of, I've seen this a million times, it's always BLS, so let's bring them along. And then they don't get cut loose. So it's kind of a two-sided disease.
So a couple of the things that I observed was fire units would go on a call and they'd read the notes. And in each case, there was two that I witnessed, but in each case, based on the notes, it was pretty clear that this was BLS. So they called for a BLS unit. And I understand what Dr. Dye is saying. I'm sure that a lot of these BLS calls, when they get, you know, triaged, they're going to go to nurse navigation. I get that. But then I said, well, you're the only one that can do that. And they said, yeah, for some reason, AMR paramedic units stopped and they weren't allowed to actually request the BLS unit. And so then what you would get, they didn't have the same ability that we had to downgrade anymore to that, get that BLS unit. So now you're going to get an ALS unit. You get a BLS unit. They get there. My experience was the ALS unit cleared the fire unit and then waited for the BLS unit. Now you've got two transporting units that are out of service at the same time. I don't know what time that takes, but that was my experience. So when I saw it, I was like, well, this is a change. This is different. This is weird. Right resource, right call type, right unit. And it didn't make sense to me that's what we were doing. So I'll give all that. And Jimmy's heard some of this, but I'll give him the other stuff that I observed. It was just a question for the best we can, you know, with all these resources we're trying to put in the system, whether it's a BLS unit or a car for that matter, how do we best utilize all these units? Because we need them all if we're going to try and keep the heavy assets waiting for the critical calls. So that was it. I know you guys.
Yep. 100% agreed to hopefully we get it right on the first pass, but you know, we can't be 100% 100% of the time. Yeah, any experiences that you've had, examples that we can look in, see if there's, you know, patterns that we recognize, things like that would be very helpful.
Yeah, I was just going to add, Chief, that dispatch is really challenged because you have to answer calls fast. People don't like to wait. You got to get a call processed within 2.5 minutes. Sometimes you get very poor information. And so the cards basically default still today to probably sending more than needs to be sent. The crews have the option of basically changing their response, whether they want to go code 1 or code 3. And if they think that, you know, this is a call, but I think the key here is that if they're going to request a BLS ambulance, then the other part that needs to go with is to cancel the ALS ambulance that's coming. Otherwise, you have two resources being tied up. So I think maybe that's the part that needs to be sorted out. The reason we went to this approach initially is that we were not sure how ALS and BLS would work in the system, whether our triaging would be accurate. And so we wanted that second level of assessment by the fire first response team. If they're making that decision, ALS, BLS, just on the call notes, you know, there are times when the call notes are completely inaccurate, which I think is the risk you take. And so I think that hindsight's always 20/20, but foresight, when you're listening to the dispatch call, it's hard to tell, honestly, in many cases, if it's going to be an ALS or BLS call. And even I've arrived on scene many times and wondered why it was sent as an ALS call. And that all comes down to what we get at dispatch. So when you have 2 minutes to basically interrogate or 2.5 minutes to figure something out and then send a response, and not surprisingly, it's not going to be accurate as often as we would like. And I think that that's the challenge. And it doesn't matter really what set of dispatch cards you use. Every dispatch system out there is not going to be 100% accurate. It's going to miss a bunch of calls on either end. Some will be triaged as high acuity when it's actually low acuity. And there are going to be some that go as high acuity that end up being low acuity. That's the reality of the system.
Yeah, and Chief, the resource management group that Chief Samario is chair of, we talked a lot too about these more operational logistical things about when there's two units assigned, and just to get and I think we start out with just wanting to get a beat for just how often that stuff's happening and things like that to try to fix that. Because I agree, there's definitely some operational sort of redundancy that's kind of overusing stuff, but getting a look to see how often frequently we have to deal with that, I think, is our kind of our first step.
And don't get me wrong, I agree with that. It's risk, right? That's the operative word, is you don't want to create too much risk. We have QI, QA, we have ways to review these things. We have ways to review if paramedics are pushing a BLS unit and actually should be a paramedic unit. We can review that, and that's behavior. It's just the data, right? So I'm data informed, and I've been that way my whole career here. And when you see that we're this far away from risk and safety, how can we work our way closer to that risk with some of the decisions we're making for dispatch? But it addresses the data, and it shows, I mean, I don't know what the number is, Dr. Sani, but it's like 60% of the ALS calls are supposed to be BLS or something. I don't know, there's some number in there, but it's data stuff, right? So I think we continue. That's all I'm saying. Continue to look at it, and how can we do that? It sounds like you guys are working towards that, which is great.
All right. Thank you, Chief Weiss. I'll Dr. Moore Clancy, anything for the group? No? Okay. Thank you. Let's see. Mark or Jennifer from WECA.
Well, I would defer, thank you for the opportunity. I'm going to defer to either Jennifer or Kim, since the focus, as Adrian's already talked about, is the impact of going forward with Nurse Navigator. So if one of them wants to weigh in on how that's going, where we're at, and ready for getting ready, that's to be the update I think we want to provide.
Yeah, so Nurse Navigator, we've got the cards back from APCO, which is good. We start training. That starts our staff training on the 27th. So next Monday, we begin that staff training. We're working with Motorola. So the March 4th date, we have to have a callback number for when Nurse Nav sends a call back into our center. So we're working to get that done. So we should be able to meet that March 4th date for that callback number. So I think everything else looks good. Kim, do you have anything additional that I missed?
Nope, that's all I can think of. If we're going to start training on Monday, whatever questions that we cannot answer or don't even have to answer for, Nurse Nav is ready to help us get those answered. So, I think it's going forward.
Thank you.
Chief Downey, I just want to make one more comment, and I wonder, it might tie nicely with what the county is going to put out regarding Nurse Navigator. On some of my ride-alongs, what strikes me is how the community that we serve, particularly care facilities and other things, still don't understand the 911 system and how they basically call for the wrong resource in the wrong way. And that leads to a lot of calls. I wonder if this is something else that needs to happen, because I think that we're trying to fix it on the back end, which is the response we send. But sometimes the right thing would be to try to fix it on the front end, which is for them to call the right number, so they're not basically going into the 911 resource as much as they are. I mean, the calls at WACA have gone up, as have the calls to first response agencies and the ambulance company. And I think some of this is because people want a resource to take someone X from place, you know, spot one to spot two. And there are many ways to do that. And unfortunately, the easiest solution seems to be the 911 system, but there are many other options within the system, including, non-911resources. So I'm wondering if the county is starting to look at some of that as well, in terms of sort of, you know, tying that into some of the stuff that comes with Nurse Navigator.
I think our original outreach for Nurse Navigator will be specific to that without muddying the information. But I do think that we, public health, have a lot of people already working with long-term care facilities, and we could definitely, bring a message to them, an educational message. I would want help wording that message, as it's touchy. But I don't see why we couldn't help in on that front end piece, and it can be a couple different directions. I mean, the long-term care is one thing, and that's a pretty consistent message for all of them. But then on the public side too, when to, when not to call 911, those kind of public education side where we can help with where public health touches, I think would be a great partnership. And I know WECA already does work around some of those messages as well. So maybe we can work together to get the message out further.
I'm more than willing to help in any way I can, because I think there are a lot of calls that we go on that we don't need to go on, period. And I think that's because people don't understand. A lot of staff turnover, and there's a lot of misunderstanding of what comes across. And I think that this is what is very frustrating sometimes, to try to listen to the calls and understand that you're at the mercy of the caller. And if the caller doesn't know who to call and call it correctly, then you're stuck and you have to send a resource and you have 2 minutes to answer the phone call, right? So it is really difficult, because even at WACA, the, pickup times are getting longer because the volume of calls is really difficult, and there's only so much you can do.
Yeah, the other thing is that the state is taking a more active interest in this. They now actually have an individual who's like a resource to long-term care facilities. That I think Chief Samario mentioned the letter that came from the state talking about reminding long-term care facilities of their responsibilities, such as adequate staffing to help people up off the floor. And so the state is also interested in this topic. And I think it seems that we may have found somebody who is an ally in that new position of the EMS liaison to long-term care.
All right. Looking around the room, I believe that's updates from all agencies. Last item on the agenda is good of the order, or Ira, anybody with public comment?
No one.
No? Okay. No. Thank you. Anything for the good of the order?
Chief, I have one go back for TVF and Art. Next week, we are launching our advanced practice provider with our ARM 53. So one of our community paramedics is going to be married up with a physician assistant. We're calling ARM 53. And that unit will be requested by TVFNR resources at these licensed care facilities to create some ER diversion, where these costs associated in the economics of an ER visit are illogical, and obviously take an ambulance out of the system, and then the cascade of events that happen at the hospital and wall times and more ambulances out of the system. So that unit deploys next week on the 28th. It'll be a very soft rollout, and it won't go through WACA. It will be our crews will get on scene, do initial triage, do a phone consult. They'll respond code one. They will get there and take the patient and a transfer, and then our crews, once phone calls take place, the ambulance will get released, and our crews will do that. And that's funded through Oregon Department of Human Services, a funding and a grant mechanism. So we got a 2-year pilot. So that starts Tuesday. Anybody has any questions, I can stay on and answer those if you have them.
Thank you, Chief. Anything else for the good of the order? No? Okay. Next meeting is February 27th. And if there's no other business, we'll adjourn today's meeting. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye, everybody.